It's international break, and here on the Totally Football Show, we're reliving the time the nation got a semi at the World Cup. So dig out your jars of pickles, your half and half waistcoats, and your ill-advised Robbie Williams cameos as England play Croatia again. This time not in a World Cup semi-final, but a relegation six-pointer. Also, we'll be looking at other international fixtures. We'll be talking PSG, Don't Pass to Me, and alas, Smith and John at the Villa. All that in this Totally Football Show. Sweet sounds of the OJs with Love Train, which must mean that England are rolling back into your station as they prepare for this whopping game with Croatia. Woo. By the way, many thanks to Dave Payne for that top line. Riasta Villa, if it all goes pear-shaped for Villa, will the managerial team be known as Alas Smith and Johns? Here in the pod and pumped up for this week of international fun, we've got Matt Davis Adams.
Hello, James.
Commentator for Chelsea TV, a man who's changed his Twitter handle three times in a month.
Certainly have, yeah. I'm sort of happy with the one I've settled on now.
And what have you gone for now?
Matt Davis Adams. Prosaic, but, you know.
And what was the journey that got you there?
Well, it was part of this whole name change thing.
What were the other ones?
So we were Matt Davis FC and then to MJDA FC, which went down very poorly.
Right.
So, yeah, Matt Davis Adams for the foreseeable.
Okay, excellent. Jonathan Norcroft, what is your Twitter handle?
Oh, at J Northcroft, James.
Brilliant.
Prosaic.
Keep it simple. Yeah, welcome to the show, by
Thank
the way.
You. Thanks.
Jonathan, as you know, listener, is the football correspondent for the Sunday Times and author of the extravagantly titled Deadlines and Darts with Delhi, : My World Cup Diary. Speaking of keeping it simple.
I've already had an accidental partridge for that, so it's a result.
David Priest, also here, fresh from the number one podcast.
Thanks for having me back in this international break.
Not at all, David. Always good to have you here. Can you remember what happened in Russia?
I always like to look forward, not look backwards. I'm that type of person.
I genuinely really struggle with some of the details, and I bet, listener, you feel the same way. So to test out how much recall people have of the whole Russian experience, Jonathan, I think you've got a question or two.
I do, James, yes. First question, France went on to win the tournament,
yep.
But how did they open? How did they open their campaign?
Can you remember that, Matt?
I can remember
this
second one.
This is astonishing.
One. Yes, I can, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, listen, we'll leave that one open and see if you can come up with that. Yeah, go on, fire the other ones at us and we'll come up with some more later.
How many goals did Panama concede in total and how many did they score?
Oh, these are good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you got another?
What was the score and who were the goalkeeper? Who were the goal scorers? Or the goalkeepers, David, when Uruguay played Russia in the final round of games in Group A?
That's tricky.
Meaningless game.
Not a clue.
Dead rubber.
Was it?
A bit of a dead rubber, yeah.
Okay.
Little clue
what was
there.
The score and who were the keepers
and
who were the goal scorers?
And anything else about the match.
No, yeah, listeners, put down that Google machine. Right. Fantastic. Well, you've got this lovely book here, which, you know, we may as well plug since you're in, Jonathan, coincidentally.
How convenient.
I'm only a couple of days into your World Cup account and you're already chucking arrows with the aforementioned Delhi.
Yeah, I mean, I actually started that as a Facebook blog. I went to the World Cup really just looking for something to do and thought I'd start sort of blogging on Facebook to pass the time. And on day three, I found myself playing darts with Dele Alli, and that was that was a sort of thing that made me think, well, I can't really write about this in the Sunday Times. I'll put it on the blog. The blog until then had really been me just making really poor predictions of scores and picking out hackneyed players to watch that by reading World Soccer. But
listening to the Totally Football Show.
I you know what, that was a big part of my
was
World
it?
Cup prep. I listened to Sash telling me how Russia were the worst team on record, wouldn't win a point.
To be fair, with 23 hours of sunshine every day, you had to find things to pass the time.
This was it. I mean, there was a bit of a twilight zone in St. Petersburg when I think day seven was the sort of basically the midnight sun. It was an all-nighter, and apparently people in St. Petersburg go absolutely mad on that date, and marriages are made, and couples meet and break up and stuff. But we were all prepping for England v Panama.
Right. Wild. Mm, excellent.
That's what it's like.
Okay. It wasn't all darts and unicorns, inflatable ones, was it? We'll touch on some more of your World Cup memories perhaps later on. But hey, listener, if your interest is piqued at this exotic-sounding World Cup in Russia, we've got three copies of your book, Jonathan, which we're going to give to people. You have to go to our Instagram page, on the gram, listener. Our address there is at Totally Football Show. Just tell us which England player, past or present, you'd most want to play a sport or a game that isn't football with. Right. Oh, and why, says producer Ben. At Totally Football Show.
Did you request that it was Dele Alli you played darts with?
No,
because if it was Kieran Trippier, it wouldn't have been a snappier title, would it?
It wouldn't. It wouldn't.
That's true.
It was a random draw. But Jamie Vardy was a funny one because I think we assumed that somehow that Vardy would be the Superman at darts, that would be right up his street, and he turned out to be the
that gimlet eye one. Suggested his
He was the very worst of all the English
was
darts.
He?
He was clueless. He was beaten. Dele didn't really know much about darts by the looks of things. Uh-huh. He sort of threw it at the middle of the board. But
how was Harry Kane at darts?
He was well prepared, had a good mental routine, efficient, won his match, of course.
Right.
Dead-eyed.
Excellent. All right. Well, it was super. Well, let's get on to England in their current incarnation after this.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Right then, listeners, so Nations League back underway. Do you remember where we left it? In Group 1 of the A-League, world champions France are on top. 4 points for them, Germany on one, Netherlands have none. Big games coming up. Saturday, it's Netherlands against Germany. And then on Tuesday, France take on Germany.
In Group 2, everyone's beating Iceland. Switzerland did them 6-0, then Belgium offered a ball measured 3-0. Now see what happens when those two play each other Friday in Brussels.
Ooh. Now, Group 3, Portugal lead with Poland and Italy on 1 point apiece. Poland and Portugal play this Thursday. Sunday's Poland-Italy clash is already a must-win game for both sides.
And in Group 4, Spain are back in business. Off to a perfect start, beating both England 2-1 and Croatia 6-0. England face Spain on Tuesday, but first, Croatia in a relegation six-pointer.
Spontaneity tick. All right. England-Croatia, now that sounds familiar. It sounds a lot like the World Cup semi-final.
This is it. This is last chance time. It's headed away. Croatia can run away. Croatia reaches the World Cup final for the very first time. And after all that effort, all that energy, the ghost of 66 lives on for England.
Now, last time, Jonathan, it was 2-1, of course, to the Croats. Trippier opening the scoring, then Perisic and Mandzukic in extra time. This time around, it's not a World Cup semi-final, but it is an absolutely massive game.
It couldn't be bigger, could it, apart from being a World Cup semi-final?
That would make it bigger.
I mean, it was an odd... I don't know, that game in Russia was a very odd one, because you mentioned Trippier opening the scoring, and I think he was possibly England's best or most consistent player up to that point, scored that great goal. But then, of course, he was absolutely destroyed in some ways by Perisic in the match. Mm. So, what sort of to make of that? And that sort of gave perspective on his performance. And then, you know, you had John Stones again, was a bit of a rock for England. But I think in that game, Mandzukic taught him a few lessons.
Mm. Well, no Mandzukic this time around. With that in mind, do we see it being different? Can England get revenge for the 2-1 defeat, Matt?
Yeah, I think they can. It's different because it's going to be England's first in their 988th senior international first ever played behind closed doors, which is always a real curiosity of a football match. You know, it's a tiny ground, a training ground, essentially. So Croatia actually quite used to playing behind closed doors. They've done it a few times in recent years. So what impact that has on the game will be interesting. I think Gareth Southgate's squad is quite interesting in and of itself and maybe reflects his attitude towards the Nations League. You know, he hasn't gone for people like Daniel Sturridge or maybe people in form like Callum Wilson. It looks like we're going to see
Ben Chilwell, because Luke Shaw and Danny Rose both dropped out of the squad injured. So there's lots from an England perspective. They look like they've got a settled back three, but as for the rest of it, are we going to see James Maddison, Harry Winks, maybe even Mason Mount?
You've seen quite a lot of Mason Mount, haven't you?
Certainly have, yeah. I've seen him since he was about 16. He started making waves in the Chelsea Academy sides, and he was quickly earmarked as one who would be sent out on loan at an early age, which he was with Vitesse last season. He was absolutely fantastic for them, 10 goals and 7 assists. Obviously, Eredivisie's not that high a standard of football, but he's carried it on to his time at Derby. He won a couple of youth cups and the UEFA Youth League when he was with Chelsea, but really good fit for him having Jody Morris, who was his coach for a number of years, coming through at Derby. And a nice story he told the media this week when Frank Lampard called him into his office and said, "Yeah, I think I'm going to drop you for a couple of games. Just kidding, you're in the England squad." And then challenged him to try and get as many caps as Lampard did, which is quite an ass scene, as Lampard got 106. But he is a player of real potential. And you know, there's the tendency to say this with Chelsea youth players, he's the one who's going to come through. But
is he?
He's certainly got a chance.
What position are we talking about, Matt?
He'd be playing in the three of midfield and under Sarri's system. So he'd probably be taking Kovacic or Ross Barkley's place.
Okay.
I would assume. But I already think that he's a bit further on in his development than, say, Ruben Loftus-Cheek. And obviously Loftus-Cheek is not in the England squad, yeah. And Mount is, which would maybe point to that. But he's definitely a player of massive potential. But as Pat Nevin of this parish often says, it's just potential at this stage. You know, we've seen it before with Lewis Baker, is one who's struggling to get a game at Leeds. And Charlie Musonda, who we all thought was going to do great things when he was in the Chelsea youth team, couldn't get a game at Betis, couldn't get a game at Celtic, and now he's at Vitesse. So it's potential, but he's doing it in the Championship. So, and clearly Southgate rates him. He was training with the England squad before the World Cup,
right,
to kind of make up the numbers. And he only made his under-21 debut last month, scored against Latvia, and he's been fast-tracked to the senior squad. So,
very impressive.
Good to have a look at him.
Yeah. David, what do you make of the squad? And should Harry Kane be rested for this game?
Not if they want to win the game, no, I don't think so. But if the big problem in the summer in the World Cup was obviously the midfield area, and not just from a creative sense, but also from real genuine midfielders controlling the game. And I always go back to when I first saw Nathaniel Chalobah playing. And at 18 years old, he was controlling games in the Championship on his own, dictating the pace of the game, controlling it with his passing, his range of passing. And I'd just like to see somebody in front of that back four who will do that a little bit more. I know, Jordan Henderson's, he's capable of doing that. And if he's asked to do more than what he's asked to do at Liverpool, he's capable of doing that as well. But just thinking that midfield there, that's where we always seem to lose games, and certainly against Croatia in the World Cup that happened.
Chalobah's actually the selection that's gone under the radar, I think, because obviously we're all excited about Mount and Sancho being in the squad. But the fact Chalobah hasn't even played much, you know, for Watford, but he's definitely somebody that not just Southgate, but the whole kind of FA development machine has been right behind. And I thought it was a bit of a statement selection to put him in.
I think so. I think it's because then he's right to try and create this, like a club side. So it's not especially the biggest names or the players that are in the best form. It's going to be players who suit the way that he wants to play. And there's nobody else. Well, there's not many players like him in and around the squad. And I'd like to see him given a chance.
Brilliant. Okay. The match being played behind closed doors, by the way, because somebody mowed a swastika into the pitch when Croatia played Italy 2 years ago. I'm not sure. It might have been dyslexic Hindu or something. But anyway, that game, by the way, itself, Croatia-Italy game, was itself behind closed doors, I believe, because of, well, racist chanting by fans against Norway. So there's some wrong-uns there, that's for sure. Things haven't been going too well for Croatia, David, since that World Cup, well, final with France. They lost that, of course. Subadzic and Mandzukic are both retired from international football, and they kicked off their Nations League campaign by getting absolutely hammered 6-0 by Spain in Seville. What's the mood going into this clash with England in Rijeka? Well, let's hear from our special Croatian correspondent, Juraj Vrdoljak. Juraj, thanks so much for joining us. First question, what went wrong against Spain?
A lot of things. Croatia did have they started well, actually. I mean, they pressed really good, and that's one of the aspects of Croatian play which really functions good for a longer period of time, even before the World Cup. But after that first goal, things just sort of fell apart. Some decisions made by Zlatko Dalic were also really weird, to include Marco Rog of Napoli on the right back didn't help the situation. And once Spain got the first goal, they just went ahead, and basically nothing functioned after that first goal. So it became a disaster, really.
Yeah. No Mandzukic or Subasic after the World Cup. Is there a sense that that was the high watermark for Croatia, that now you're a little bit on the downward trend?
Well, yeah, it was always going to be an issue, because Croatia was, as we were telling during the World Cup, it was an aging squad. It still is an aging squad. And the issue with the older players leaving was always there. It was never really going to go away. The issue is with the strikers. We lost Mandzukic and Kalinic at the same time, which is really a big thing to lose for any team, let alone Croatia, who doesn't have that big pool of players ready to fit in, especially with high expectations. So yeah, that was always going to be an issue in the terms of, you know, finding a suitable replacements for the strikers without changing the formation or changing the style of play, because now you have Kramaric returning and you have Rebic as well. But, you know, apart from them, you don't really have a striker that's fit. We tried with Santini of Anderlecht, but he's this target man who is really one-dimensional. He has a certain quality, but he is still one-dimensional, so that won't do it in long term, right, especially with the expectation.
So what are your hopes for Croatia's chances of bouncing back from that 6-0 against England?
Well, as far as the England game goes, Zlatko Dalic has a couple of problems, because injuries struck Croatia really badly. Šime Vrsaljko is now declared unfit. Our first choice goalkeeper, Lovre Kalinic, is also injured with a knee injury, and whoever replaces him, three goalkeepers who are in rotation basically have one cap between themselves. So the right back's an issue, goalkeeper's an issue, Marcelo Brozovic is also out. So it'll be a tough game once again.
Still, at least you do have the number one player in the world, though. You're right, in Luka Modric. Is he any more popular now in Croatia, now that he is the world's best officially?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's always going to be a broad issue about him. He's hugely popular, no doubt about it. But his famous perjury case has now been put on hold because of a procedural mistake, apparently. So people started to think whether that's because of the fact that he's declared the best in the world, that he still has a good chance of winning the Ballon d'Or. So people kind of related it to that and got a bit disappointed as well. But of course, he's, you know, there's no doubt he's the best player Croatia ever had now, and it's hard to see who will change him in that position.
One of these sides is heading for relegation. David, which one's it going to be?
I don't know. Just the pessimist in me says England.
Really?
Yeah, sorry.
But the Croatia are really struggling, would you say?
Yeah, but teams always, you know, when they come against us, they'll always find a way. I don't think they've maybe a bit more streetwise, but you see about...
Their three goalkeepers have only got one cap between them.
Yeah, but we've got to get shots on goal to make that count, though, James. You know, if we can get that far forward, if we're not controlling the game. So, yeah, you're right in saying that. It could be a plus point.
Yeah.
But I'm surprised that they haven't got... I don't know what the structure's like below sort of the full team, and whether they've got like the correct pathway for players come through. But I've been to Croatia quite a few times, and we were talking just before about Novigrad, third division side, same player quite a bit. And some of the players they've got, they're just ridiculously good, talented players. And... yeah, and I know there's an issue with owners and registrations, and you know, if you don't play ball with the owners and the hierarchy of clubs, then you've got no chance of progressing.
Well, that's part of the issue with Modric and that perjury trial, which curiously has suddenly developed this procedural problem. Croatia, so many ways to beat England, from great players to clumps of grass. What do you think, Jonathan?
I think they look on a bit of a downer at the moment, Croatia, because of you know, the problems we've talked about, and I think Brozovic being out is a big big deal. I thought the maybe the biggest single factor in that the last time they played was just how completely Croatia controlled the sort of tempo of the game, and a lot of it actually came from him. Rakitic and Modric were superb as well, but I think that's a big miss for him, and maybe just the fact that Gareth has gone for young players in this game might help England, because you know this Nations League, they'll find meaning in it even if we don't, and I wonder if those senior Croatian players will find quite as much meaning in it.
Yeah, young players, but some of whom are racking up some really amazing experience. I'm not sure, did we mention Jadon Sancho?
No.
It's because that's the other fresh name in there who's been doing brilliantly for Borussia Dortmund, Matt.
Yeah, he has. Mr. Assister, basically, at the start of the season in the Bundesliga, and spoke very well to the media earlier this week. They kept trying to kind of push him on, why did you leave Manchester City? And he was, well, I'm not particularly interested in talking about that because I'm here representing England. And the kind of assumption that, well, you know, you'll be back to the Premier League as soon as possible. And he sort of shrugged that off and laughed at talk of £100 million transfers and whatever. Really somebody who's a leading light maybe for English players in the future, in that he's, you know, he's not gone on loan to Germany for a season. He's right. Gone there permanently. One would assume that Manchester City will have first dibs on him if he decides to come back at any stage, but to be playing where he's playing in a Dortmund team that are doing so brilliantly at the start of this season, you know, in front of what, 80,000 people every week, why would you want to come back to sit on the bench?
Yeah, he'll be in front of no people, of course, this weekend.
Yeah, maybe that'll throw him. Yeah,
I went to see him in March, and it was I mean, made me think what a great club Dortmund are for a young player in their development, because although they've got the 80,000, they've got a very sort of humble training ground. They've got that German model of fans getting in to watch training. It feels very, very sort of low-key and quite a good sort of friendly place for someone like him to develop. And I know, for example, that the FA are quite excited about the fact that being in Germany means that he'll be doing interviews, he'll be doing media all the time. He'll be allowed to grow up a little bit more quickly than an English academy or even just an English young Premier League player is allowed to. So in terms of life experience, and he's a kid that's come through a lot already. I mean, him sort of saying that he didn't even watch the 2014 World Cup on his own telly because he didn't have a telly, it just tells you where someone like him has come from.
I think it's a great point, that about what players coming into this country and coming into the Premier League from outside, they've got ahead of the younger players here. It does force you to grow up and mature.
Because you went abroad, didn't you?
Yeah, but I wasn't mature. I was 30, but it doesn't mean I was mature.
Like, did you grow up? Growing up?
I did, yeah. I mean, I became a father and everything, do you know what I mean? So it was, so it was good in that respect.
Croatia-England is on Friday, but there are other exciting Nations League games. Many others, listener. We'll talk about some of those, only a few, after this.
He lines up to hit it, and yes! It's deflected for a corner! That's over 12 corners! Yes! No time to take it, though. It's finished 0-0. What a result!
Sorry, our fault. You see, with same-game multibets from Paddy Power, you can combine multiple selections from one match into one bet, and you'll get money back as a free bet if one leg of your fourfold same-game multibet lets you down. Paddy Power, enough of the nonsense. Applies to pre-match fourfold same-game multibets on UK and top European leagues. Max free bet £10 per customer per day. Minimum odds. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Croatia-England clashing, of course, Matt, with the other big Friday night appointment, 8 o'clock Channel 5, Model Railway Challenge.
It's had some really good reviews on Twitter, I saw.
Yeah, it has, actually. Thanks for that. Right, OK. Other bits of Nations League, listener. We're in the second tier, League B, as it's known. Northern Ireland are there. They're in a group with Bosnia-Herzegovina, who can pretty much wrap up the group, actually. They're already 6 points clear of Northern Ireland and Austria after a slightly fortuitous win over Michael O'Neill's side in the opening game. And Northern Ireland taking on Austria on Friday night. That's a big game. Then they go to Bosnia Monday, that game in Sarajevo. Bailey Peacock-Farrell, David, tell me more.
Yeah, it's just a young goalkeeper has blossomed, especially under Marcelo Bielsa. He was somebody who was highly thought of at Leeds, and then he went out to play four games for York. I saw one of those games, and he didn't do very well at all.
Okay.
And he went 2 years between making his debut and making his second appearance for for Leeds. But this season, he's just blossomed. He's just, he looks a great goalkeeper.
He'll be minding the net for Northern Ireland, will he?
I'm not quite sure. I would have thought so on current form. Michael McGovern isn't playing for Norwich, so I'd imagine he would be.
Okay. Also in League B, Wales and Ireland are in that group with Denmark. Ireland very much bottom on nil points. They host Denmark on Saturday, seeking revenge for the 5-1 defeat the Danes gave them in the playoffs last year. And then they'll have Wales on Tuesday seeking revenge for that 4-1 defeat that the Welsh gave them in Cardiff just last month. O'Neill and Keane in some trouble here, although there's no Christian Eriksen.
Out for the foreseeable by the looks of things.
Yeah, that sounds a bit Darren Fletcher-esque. Am I reading that wrong?
It was somebody from the Danish team described it as a chronic problem, didn't they? Which, never sounds good. But, I'm not sure I fancy Ireland's.
He's addicted to marijuana. He's got a chronic problem.
Right. I know which doctor he should see. Wales, by the way, have a friendly with Spain. Spain. Are you excited about this, Jonathan?
Very excited,
okay.
Yeah.
No Jordi Alba, of course, because he doesn't get on with Enrique. Diego Costa also still missing. But you know who has got a call-up? Johnny Otto out of that of Wolves.
Quite right, too. He's in my fantasy team because he called Johnny.
Brilliant.
He's doing well for me, too.
Wales won't be fielding Gareth Bale for that clash, apparently. He's being held back for Tuesday's game away in Ireland, but they do have other talents. Ross, for example, says, how excited can Wales be about a spine of Ethan Ampadu, Brooks and Lawrence? Matt?
Very excited, I would think. Ethan Ampadu was absolutely sublime against Ireland last month, and he's a star of the future, no doubt. He's been unlucky not to get any minutes for Chelsea this season, but I think he might against Partey in a couple of weeks' time. Brooks, obviously, 2-2 for Bournemouth. I really like Harry Wilson as well, and there's a great story about him. He earned his first cap in 2013. He didn't get his second until earlier this year, but his granddad won £125,000 because he'd put 50 quid on at 2,500 to 1. He came on as an 87th minute substitute against Belgium. He's a good player. He's on loan at Derby this season. And also Tyler Roberts, who came into the team last month, striker for Leeds. He's averaging a goal every other game in the Championships. They've got a really, really good blend. You've got Ben Davis, Aaron Ramsey, Joe Allen, people like that still around the squad. Wales have got a strong squad. They were poor in Denmark in their second game, but I don't know how well they do against Spain. Not that it particularly matters because it's a friendly, but I would fancy them to beat Ireland in Ireland.
And Ryan Giggs, not the total bust that some people thought he might prove to be on the sidelines.
I really can't tell because they beat a very, very average Ireland side. But he's done okay so far. But as I say, he's got a great squad of players to work with, so he should be able to get a tune out of them.
I think they'd be in real trouble if they lose Ampadu. They'd be in real trouble. If he gets injured, they'll be up creek without Ampadu.
My word. Strong language.
Yeah, indeed. Ampadu's he's an interesting case because I think he's influenced the FA actually in what's happened subsequently with Declan Rice. I mean, losing a talent like him, which you know, he chose to go to Wales at an early age because Wales did all the groundwork and the courting and there was his link with his father. But I think that's one of the major things that's redoubled England to try and nab some of these younger players and put in the work they did in getting Declan Rice to switch codes, as it were.
Ampadu, push pineapple, grind coffee.
And he's at club as well. You know, you'd have thought he would have gone to Arsenal because his dad's the under-18s coach, but he chose to go to Chelsea instead.
All right.
Interesting.
Young players pushing free, breaking out the envelope. Nice. Down in League C, where O'Neill's side may be heading, we find Scotland. And Scotland, by contrast, Jonathan, are looking good. You're Scottish, aren't you?
I am, and we're riding high in the. It's our best ever start to the Nations League, I think, with our historic win. It felt like a historic win actually against Albania because it had been so long since there'd been any victory of any sort.
Right.
Although actually, there's some sort of weird unbeaten run that Scotland have gone on in kind of competitive games, but you know, none of them have counted in any sense because we've been out of qualification picture when we've played them. But it is a big game in Israel for Scotland because, you know, they probably are the main competitors in the group. And there's just this spectre of Euro 2020. There's games being held at Hampden Park. It's the closest we'll ever come to hosting a tournament. And it would be the most Scotland thing ever to actually not qualify for a tournament we're hosting.
I thought we discussed last time, it's almost nailed on. You have to win, I think, what was it, two more games to get into
the playoffs, I think.
Right, so three games in you there. But the next game's away in Israel, where everybody wins. Only Andorra and Liechtenstein have not won since in the last 3 years, effectively, there.
Yeah, and they are, I think they're without Kyle, and Tom Ahmed is injured, and it's all set up for Stephen Naismith to put them to the sword.
Right. They've got Moanes Dabur, who scored twice for Salzburg against Celtic just last week in the Europa League. But Scotland, of course, have James Forrest, who's on four fire goals. In exactly the kind of incident that the UN have been warning us about. So, what, four goals for him at the weekend?
Four goals at the weekend, and anyone that's scoring is worth their weight in gold for us. And we've also got Johnny Russell, who's tearing it up in America for Kansas City. Stephen Naismith having a little bit of an Indian summer. So for once, that part of the pitch, which has always been our sort of downfall, is looking okay.
You're an Aberdeen fan, aren't you?
I am. I grew up in the glory days. I was very lucky, but also got to see
them. That means when I was playing for them.
I once met this man in a Starbucks in Union Street, which was...
Oh, did you?
Yeah, did you?
Nice. Okay. They're about the only side that's not ahead of Rangers at the moment. is Aberdeen a seventh, are they?
I think just below.
Fifth. Yeah. Anyway, you'll get your chance, I'm sure. Other games coming up, internationally speaking. Oh, on Saturday, this is big. Netherlands, Germany. One of the real blue-chip European rivalries there. Both teams looking for a first win in the section. Germans, in fact, have only won one of the last four competitive games. You excited about that, David, Matt,
no.
Jonathan? No? Really?
I am.
Yeah, good, yeah, okay. Yeah. Explain to him, Jonathan.
Well, you know, Germany trying to bounce back from the World Cup, maybe going to try and build the team more around Joshua Kimmich and Goretzka and some of the younger players. They play France on the Tuesday, which is going to be a big game for them.
0-0 last time.
0-0 last time. We've got Holland under Koeman, who is trying to rebuild, you know, his own reputation a little bit. Has already fallen out with Van Dijk a little bit. Ooh. Said Van Dijk was too laid back, which was quite an odd sort of point to make, given that composure's been, you know, one of the mainstays of his career.
Also, they're Dutch.
Well, he has to find something to fall out about, doesn't he? Yeah. So there's a lot in that game.
Okay, cool.
Be interesting to see if Leroy Sané gets some minutes as well, back in the squad, obviously, and what Tony Kroos said about him last time and him leaving. But you can't think about this fixture without seeing Rudy Voller and Frank Rijkaard.
Well, indeed.
Can I just say that I am actually quite excited about this fixture. Okay. I just wasn't listening to you, James.
Oh, really? What did you think I was talking about?
I have no idea. I just said no.
All right. Are you, David Priest, excited about the huge game? And this is the last one we'll do, promise, listener. The huge game on Sunday. It's Poland-Italy.
Can't wait. Absolutely can't wait.
I mean, this is big. Poland do have a game this evening, Thursday, against Portugal, which is pretty big because Portugal on top of this little group. Poland, who had a draw with Italy in Bologna in September. They've not beaten the Italians since 1974. But if they do again this time, it could be catastrophic for the Azzurri, who prepared for this themselves by failing to win again at home to Ukraine, and a friendly they had at the Luigi Ferraris, the Marassi, to raise money for the victims of the bridge disaster there in Genoa, a 1-1 there. They've now had one win in their last seven games, Italy, and that was against Saudi Arabia. So, you know, we talk a bit more about Italy and the squad and that in Golazzo this week, which is largely dedicated to kind of wallowing around in Italia 90, the extraordinary pigs in troughs corruption that surrounded the tournament, and of course the glorious players and sometimes football that came about on the pitch. Oh, of course, Poland have Krzysztof Piątek, who plies his trade in Genoa and is currently on 13 goals in 8 matches for Genoa, who, despite being doing pretty well, have just fired their manager and brought back the man who fired twice in his last two visits to the Genoa bench. He's been fired on both occasions, so they've replaced the guys doing quite well with him. Anyway, we're going to take a quick pause, listener, on the other side of which there's some fascinating topics. Scandal in Belgium, Dulwich Hamlet, why now might be a good time to bid for Edson Cavani, and other things too. All awaits you in mere seconds.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show, sponsors of Melchester Rovers. Find out more at RoyTheRoversOfficial.com.
Woohoo! Here's some questions for you. Adam Gordon, if the guests had ranked countries by their national anthems, who would be in their top three? Oh, also, if that's not meaty enough for you, if you could introduce one new rule into international football, what would it be? Adam suggests five aside if games go to extra time. That's a good suggestion. David, what do you think? Were you listening?
No. I was trying to think of my favourite
national anthem.
Yeah.
It's Russia.
Is that what it is?
It's
is it?
Surely Russia.
No, well, I mean, it's not a national anthem per se, but Flower of Scotland.
Oh, yeah.
Why not? I'll tell you why. I went to watch Scotland against Nigeria at Pittodrie while I was up there. And, like, there was a full house and everyone was sort of banging it out. Their hair stood on the back of my neck. A beautiful moment.
Really?
Yeah. I almost felt Scottish.
Okay.
I don't like it.
Do you not?
What do you like?
I think it's, it's a bit mawkish. And,
I know,
and
but Aberdeen's like a sort of, it's a principality inside.
It is.
Inside Scotland.
It's we are our own autonomous sort of superior region. But I've never liked Flower of Scotland. It's a modern kind of mawkish folk song, really. I'd go for some Robbie Burns or something.
Okay, very nice. Matt, what do you think?
Chile, Italy and Wales would be my top three.
How does the Chilean one go?
I can't really sing it, but I've just got this image of it at World Cup 98 of Ivan Zamorano just belting it out, and there's a big sort of finish to it, which is quite spectacular. So always had a liking for that.
For applause like that, that's a solid ending.
It's a spine tingler, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Lovely. Okay, let's move on to another question. Gingerbread, quoth the Raven, says, what's everyone doing for non-league day? Ooh, it's not long non-league day, but Matt, you've got a solid suggestion for Dulwich Hamlet.
Yeah, it's definitely worth a mention. It's tonight, but if you're in the South London area, Crystal Palace have very kindly sent a team down to play against Dulwich Hamlet, who, as we know, are playing their games at Tooting and Mitcham these days because they've been kicked out of their own ground, essentially. But they've only got one home game in October and they're very much hand-to-mouth at the moment. So they need the match day ticketing revenue. So Palace have agreed to play this friendly. People like Max Meyer will be involved, Jason Puncheon, Connor Wickham, Yarrow Riederwald, Scott Dan, Joel Ward. So if you can get down there, do it. But if not, savedulwichhamlet.org.uk. Lots of ways you can get involved in petitioning to try and stop the club going to the wall, which unfortunately looks like a possibility.
Right. Quite the fixture, that. And well done, Palace. First team players and manager Roy Hodgson. Dulwich Hamlet hosting Crystal Palace. A bit of a mismatch, but maybe Palace can get something from it. I'm not sure. Maybe a draw. We'll see. Anyway, adults £10. It's a 7 p.m. kickoff. Gates open at 5:30. And concessions and Dulwich Hamlet FC season ticket holders, £5. James asks, with Jardim now without a club, would he be a good option for United if they sacked Jose? David Priest, you a big Leonardo Jardim fan?
Not particularly, no.
All right. Jonathan, do you have a view on the erstwhile Monaco manager?
I do. I think he's really good. Apart from the Portuguese element, he'd certainly bring a bit of joy and flair to United.
Doesn't seem very United-like in that he likes to work with sort of young players and bring them to not quite the current
day. Well, they used to do.
They did, yeah, but not the current day model so much.
Wasn't there an element of luck to the success he's had there, though?
He kept them competitive despite selling the club from under him.
Yeah, I suppose. But, I mean, they weren't playing under his style. It was forced upon him. He's more a defensive coach than...
I'm probably way beyond my kind of skill set here, but as I recall, he was known for his defensive football when he was in Portugal, which was probably what earned him the job. But then he certainly was at the helm for a sustained period, a very attractive play, which saw them win the French title and go deep in the Champions League.
Yeah, I mean, he did something with Mbappe and Thomas Lamar and maybe he evolved as a coach, but he's got a certain gravitas to him. He looks like he could handle a big job, but whether anyone can handle United at the moment is another matter.
That's a fair point. Thierry Henry hasn't been officially confirmed yet, I don't think, but the notion is that he will be taking over in the Principality, eschewing a move to Aston Villa, who in his place have gone for Dean Smith, who joins from a Brentford side, who are 3 points and 8 places above Villa in the table. Uniquely, he won't be bringing his own assistant, but it has had John Terry foisted upon him, Daniel Storey, saying that's going to be a slightly odd strategy, appointing a new manager and telling him who his assistant's going to be.
Yeah, it is, but it's a great appointment. And I've seen a bit of Brentford over the last couple of seasons, and the type of football that they play is really, really easy on the eye, and he's got good championship experience, whereas if they'd gone for the Henri Terry double axe, obviously you wouldn't get that, even though it's in vogue with your Lampards and your Gerrards to pick that kind of generation of players. But Dean Smith, thoroughly knowledgeable about the division. I'm not sure how much money the new Villa owners have got, but he can work with limited resources, he's proven. And as was mentioned on Monday, you know, John Terry's not everybody's cup of tea, certainly in the media, but people who play with him love him. So right. He knows that squad as well. So it might actually work out quite well. I guess it's just whether Smith might feel he's stepping on his toes and he's the next manager in waiting.
I think there's a couple of things for me here. One, like you just said there, it's the focus today from the owners was on John Terry, not the new manager. Just seeing how pleased he was and how much of a great job he's going to. Yeah, I think that might be one of the tweets that Dan was referring to. No mention of the manager, but of JT. And also the difficulty going from dressing room to coaching staff room for John Terry. He knows all the players and sort of like on a personal level. And okay, he went in there as a type of leader and sort of he probably would have been an intermediate between sort of Steve Bruce and the side a little bit. But yeah, that'll be a difficult one.
Okay,
does make you fear a bit for Dean Smith the way it's been done, because I mean he's been putting his hand up trying to get that job for quite some time, you know, putting his Villa credentials out there, and it does look like they've gone for a couple of stars and then arrived back at him, but with the stardust of Terry,
it might work in the opposite way. You know, the focus off the manager might allow him just to get on with the job, but you can see when they go the first time they dug out, all the cameras are going to be on JT. Yeah.
All right, moving along, Nitz says. Thoughts on the scandal in Belgium? What scandal in Belgium, Matt? Are you across this?
Nope.
Okay, so Belgian authorities have launched investigations into financial fraud and possibly match-fixing. There were 44 raids this week in Belgium, 13 more coordinated in France, Luxembourg, Cyprus, Montenegro, Serbia and Macedonia. None in Italy. This is bizarre. according to local media, Belgium's best-known agent, a former Anderlecht club official, and the current Bruges coach, Ivan Lecco, are among those being questioned. So, you know, could be something brewing there or not. I don't know, but thanks, Nitz, for...
There is something odd about Belgian football in terms of who...
Something odd
who
about can, Belgium?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think somebody told me the second division in Belgium, something like 13 of the clubs are owned by foreign investment companies or foreign owners, which... may not be because of a lifelong love of Belgian football.
Possibly so.
Might be to.
Isn't it only 2 years to get a Belgian passport in? You know, if you arrive there from outside the EU.
Yeah,
is that right?
That's why the what was the club? Was it? Was it Beveren?
There's Beveren. United had Royal Antwerp at one point.
Yeah, exactly. So they just bring players through from outside the EU and sort of.
The Leicester owners own one as well.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, well, he's out there, isn't he? Nigel Pearson is out there.
Yeah. Okay. In other news, is it time to bid for Edinson Cavani? I'm saying yes after what I read about the Paris Saint-Germain passing stats. Have you seen these, Jonathan?
No.
Okay, so you've got obviously Cavani, Mbappe, and that fellow Neymar there. So recent, I think this is for this season. Neymar passes to Mbappe 25% of the time. Okay, that's great. Yeah. Mbappe passes to Neymar 31% of the time. That's great. Mm-hmm. Now, those two players' passing stats with Cavani are 5% and 0.5%. Neymar passes to Cavani 0.5% of the time. Against Red Star Belgrade, PSG, by the way, here had 75% possession. Neymar didn't make a single pass to Cavani. Mbappe only made two. And the 40 minutes they were all three of them on the pitch against Lyon, Cavani didn't receive a single pass from the other two.
It happens.
That's amazing.
It does happen. No. When Ian McGeady was out in Spartak Moscow, he was. I think they had three Brazilians playing for at the time. So a friend of a friend, we went to see him when they played Chelsea, and he just said, watch when you're watching the game. He says they won't pass to me because they've all got sort of their own individual bonuses or whatever, and they keep the ball between themselves. So out the front four players, three of them were Brazilian, and we watched the game against Chelsea, and literally Aiden, all he tried to do what he does with the ball, just tries to take people on, and when the other three had the ball, and even when he was free out wide and trying to put him in on a goal, turned out the other way and went the other side.
Right. I mean, it does work. PSG beat Lyon in that game 5-0, and Mbappe scored four goals. Cavani got none. Apparently, there was an article in L'Equipe which suggested that players that he used to be close to, Cavani, have all gone, and now he's feeling all left out.
He's not going to score if they don't pass for him, though, is he?
I'm sorry?
He's not going to score if they don't pass for him.
That's true. Yeah. Well, other players could pass him, like Verratti that.
It's a bit like the Torres Drogba. You must have watched that one very closely. But I remember there was a point where we were so obsessed by them not passing to each other. You were observing the kickoffs to see, you know, what the body language was like when they rolled the ball to each other. It helped Drogba, didn't it? It motivated him, but not necessarily helped Torres.
Yeah. I mean, Cavani has got 5 goals in 6 league earned games this season, so he's not doing too badly, is he?
Right. Storm in a teacup, you think, Matt?
Well, it's a hangover from the Neymar thing last season, wasn't it, when he took a penalty off him. They obviously don't get along.
I guess not. Raul says, why are Europe's heavyweights, unlike PSG, slumping domestically this season? World Cup hangover, complacency, We did touch on this on Monday when Sasha was opining that the reason that Bayern are struggling, apart from the fact that they've not really bought anyone, and players getting old like Ribéry and Robin, is the fact that so many good young managers are working at the other Bundesliga sides, and Niko Kovac isn't maybe the most reliable of people to give the job to. Otherwise, there's not really a common reason. I mean, the big clubs who are struggling would be Bayern, Real Madrid and Barcelona, who are not top, but not far off it. Man United, I suppose. Who else? Oh, Monaco, of course, but then Monaco is a very special case.
I suppose it is the Bayern and Real Madrid thing. There are parallels there. I mean, they both failed to really invest in the squads because it looks like in both cases they're thinking that next summer is going to be the one where the old guard finally sort of run out and they have to splurge, and they've both made slightly odd sort of managerial choices. But I think Manchester United are their own unique sort of imperfect storm, aren't they? And Monaco are cyclical club.
But I guess the other answer to this is, let's check again in March or indeed May and see just how much these big clubs are struggling. Now, Jonathan, thank you very much for coming in today. I did mention at the start, I'd be interested to hear your kind of chief World Cup memories. What was your favourite moment of the month or so in Russia?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about this actually. It was probably Nizhny Novgorod, which turned out to be my, I think that's the best place I visited, just because, you know, Russia was a sort of story of being much better than expected, full of little hidden gems, and you know, I quite enjoyed Samara. Somebody said it was the most ugly city in the world, and you know, it's the home of the Russian space program. Yuri Gagarin, the Russian joke is that he was trying to put as much distance between himself and Samara as possible when he went to space. That was a lovely place, but Nizhny Novgorod was really sort of vibrant. Had a great night out. Ended up having sort of craft beer in a place called Astro Lager, I think was the bar. Mm. And then getting in Russia's got this sort of version of Uber called Yandex, which is better than Uber actually, because it pulls in, you know, taxis from absolutely everywhere. They come within a couple of minutes. And I ended up getting in this Uber taxi after this night out. It was a Lada. There was a young guy, he was playing sort of Russian hip hop, and then it sort of switched to Busta Rhymes, and you know, it was just this great sort of journey back through the estates in Nizhny Novgorod, maybe merry on Astro Lager, that helped. And then at the end of it, he sort of got his Google Translate app out, which was another big feature of Russia. We were all communicating via that. And I did the sort of old journalist's thing, can I have a receipt, please? And he sort of spent ages typing into this app, and this little message sort of pinged back saying, this is not designated currency, but please accept this note. It can be your memory of Nizhny Novgorod.
Oh.
And he handed me a plastic 100 rubles note, which I treasure now in my office at home. And it just summed up the kind of randomness of and pleasure of Russia, actually, which was so much better than I'd imagined.
Right. Excellent. Hey.
Complicated answer.
No, a good one. Redolent in Russian memories. What were the answers though to those three questions? Now they were, who was France's opening game against in the World Cup? David?
No idea. They won the game though, didn't they?
They did win the game. It was
Australia.
That's right, Matt.
2-0.
No, Jedinak scored a penalty and then they won 2-1.
That's it.
2-1. Ah, right.
Late goal, wasn't it?
So that was a Saturday lunchtime, I think, wasn't it?
Mm.
Maybe.
It was.
It was. Okay, boom. Question two was?
Well, question two is, how many goals did Panama concede and how many did they score?
Right, in total in the World Cup.
In total, not so leaving aside the England game, what else?
Right, so it'd be what, about kind of 11?
I'll go for 9.
James, it's 11.
Ooh. It is 11, yeah.
Scored two?
Yes.
They scored two,
scored
did they?
Against England and Tunisia.
Right, who was the goal scorers then?
Pass.
Right.
It was a very excited defender at a set piece against England, wasn't it? Because it was their first World Cup goal, wasn't it? It was 6-0,
that's right.
He scored, and it was a lovely moment.
Brilliant.
But I don't know the answer, no.
Okay, sorry about that. So if you're hanging on, if you listen to all of this just to find out, it is Google. And what about the third one? Do you have an answer
for
that?
Well, the third one was...
What was the question again?
It was what was the score and who were the goal scorers when Uruguay played Russia?
Oh, yeah, in a dead rubber.
It was a bit of a dead rubber in Group A. And if you can remember the goalkeepers as well.
I have literally no recollection of this game at all. David, what about you?
Well, I said Muslera and Akinfeev, but I mean...
There you are.
Is that what it is?
Of course, yeah.
Well, those are the goalkeepers, the goal scorers.
Well, that's not my job. The goal scorers.
Well, Russia will have won the game, did they?
I have no memory of this whatsoever.
No.
I think Russia had tailed off by this point, hadn't they?
Russia were resting.
Right.
Russia were resting. So we've mentioned one of the goal scorers already.
Okay, Cavani.
Cavani.
Oh, right, okay.
But the other ones...
Suarez.
Yes. And the other one was actually prolific at the World Cup, but for his own nation.
Oh, it was an own goal, was it?
It was an own goal.
Right, so Cheryshev?
By Cheryshev.
Cheryshev, who now is in all sorts of trouble, of course.
Yeah.
Because of that, you know, substances. Mm. All right. Okay, well, brilliant. Thank you so much for that, John. I love a quiz. Ideally, I'd have some idea about the answers, but even so, it's just fun. Anyway, with that almost wraps it up for today's Totally Football Show. But before we go, just returning to those exciting Nations League games coming up over the weekend, we've got some odds on those fixtures. Producer Ben's been speaking to Paddy Power.
Thank you, Jimbo. Time to speak to Lee Price from Paddy Power. Lee, let's talk about England versus Croatia. Give me the overall odds on this and perhaps the first goal scorer market in what is bound to be a match with an electric atmosphere.
This brings back painful memories for me. Last time they played, I was there. I was weeping in the crowd. So let's hope not for that. Actually, the odds here are very, very close because home advantage is basically ruled out. Croatia and England, almost the same price. The home team, 6-4, England, 2-1, and the draw's 21-10. But who knows?
And you've got a money back special on this one as well.
Oh, yes, we have. And I think it's a good one, actually. Money back as a free bet if Harry Kane scores. And that applies to losing first, last, A-time goal scorers, correct score, and what odds Paddy markets. Max refund £10. T&Cs apply.
Well, that's Croatia. Let's gaze ahead to Monday, where England travelled to Spain in another Nations League game. Spain beat Croatia 6-0. They've beaten England as well. What are the odds on them getting 3 or more in this game?
Your Irish colours are shining through, Ben. But actually, it's just 3-1 that Spain score 3 or more goals past the lovely Jordan Pickford. And actually, speaking of scoring, Christoph Piatek, who Jimbo loves at Genoa, and he's been tearing up Serie A, is 9-5 to score his first international goal for Poland. That sounds like free money to me if Jimbo's tips are right.
You mentioned Serie A there, Lee. Let's stick with Italy. They're not doing too well. They haven't done very well in international football for a really long time. Could they get relegated from their Nations League group?
They could. I watched them against Ukraine last night and they were terrible. But somehow they're still fifth favourites to win the Nations League at 10-1. So I've no idea what's going on. But we make it just 6-4. They get relegated from Group A3, which really would be humiliating.
And let's talk about one of the glamour ties from international football. Germany are in Amsterdam to take on Holland. Some good games between these two over the years, as we've been discussing in the show. What are the odds, though, on a red card?
Yeah, some fantastic games between these two, although their last meeting was 0-0. So maybe a red card is our best hope of excitement. It's 5-1, which is a pretty standard price, actually, for a red card.
You can find out those odds and more at paddypower.com. All prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's 18+ only, begambleaware.org, and when the fun stops, stop. Monday sees Totally Football Show return with Daniel Sturry, Jack Lang, and Raphael Honigstein, who can review the Netherlands game and look forward to that almighty clash with France. So that'll be nice. Use your free time in the meanwhile, listener, by diving into Jonathan's book Deadlines and Darts with Delhi. Have you got any more books on the way, Jonathan?
No, thankfully not. No.
All right.
No.
You can also pleasure your ears with David's number one podcast.
Yeah, we're back in business now. We had a little bit of a break because we weren't in the same city at the same time.
I see.
So
what you did? What? When was the last one you?
We did it on Tuesday.
What did you discuss in that?
It was a bit of a roundup, but we. myself and Lloyd have done something for the Premier League show.
Oh, have you?
Next Thursday.
Yeah.
On goalkeeping myths and misconceptions.
Okay, what's the biggest myth and misconception about goalkeepers?
Being beaten near post, shouldn't be beaten near post.
Right.
There's loads. I don't want to spoil
that's
the fun
true.
For you. Do you know what I mean?
Thursday, yeah. BBC
sort
One.
A teaser for you.
Yeah. Or on the iPlayer.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. And there's also Parts Unknown, the totally wrestling podcast with yourself, Matt.
Yeah, that's right. We are on WrestleMania 13 this week, which, as
you
recall,
still going back through old WrestleManias.
Yeah, we are. We're sort of rattling through them. It's going pretty quickly. But this week, the classic, as you remember, James, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Bret the Hitman Hart, double turn, really difficult to execute. Been tried in boxing and UFC a few times since.
Right.
Fabulous stuff. Carl Anker of this parish in particularly good form,
right,
on that particular subject, so we're worth a
ballet listen. Dancing for weightlifters, that's what it is.
Well, as a wrestling fan, did you particularly enjoy the end of the UFC fight the other day?
UFC managed to make WWE look classy, which is a really difficult thing to do, but they managed to do it. But yes, it's a violent ballet, David, is what we refer to the biz as.
Right. Mm. Okay. Exciting. Excellent. Well, there's a new Parts Unknown out, is there?
There certainly is. Yeah, it came out on Wednesday, and they drop every Wednesday to
every
your device of choice.
Wednesday. Boom. Hitting your audio canvas. Super. All right, well, listen, thanks everybody for being with us today, and you, listener. Have a super weekend. We'll see you Monday.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And make sure you check out our other football podcasts, the revamped Totally Football League show with Caroline Barker and the brand new Totally Scottish Football Show. Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really, and here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK, so that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5 p.m. till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.